The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Good evening, everyone. I'd just like to introduce myself. My name is Robert Martin. I'm the director of the City Bible Forum here in Melbourne, one of the co-organisers of tonight. There's been a lot of questions coming through. We're going to now invite Professor Groves and also Dr. Lewis Jones to come up to engage in what's probably going to last only about 3 or 4 hours to answer all the questions. So I'm sure that you just sit tight and relax because we're in for a fun ride, I'm sure. I'll just get Sandy, if you just move this down the track, that would be great, just so we can see everyone. There's been a number of questions coming through, and we will want to, just before we tackle some of the questions directly, I think it might be worthwhile. Now, obviously, thank you very much for your presentations, Dr. Cashbull and Professor Groves. Now, there's obviously been a robust exchange of ideas, which is exactly what we've come for here at this session. But now, I suppose there's a couple of claims and counterclaims that have been made about a couple of things, and I thought we could just hone in on a couple of those before we deal specifically with the questions. The first one is, it seems as though we can answer the question tonight about falsifying evolution, as you suggested, Colin, that if you did find a mammal in a Jurassic deposit, then you could immediately falsify evolution. That's what you said, I think, was it? Just to clarify exactly what you said.
The very bottom.
I said a modern mammal.
A modern mammal, right.
And what has been found contemporary with dinosaurs, far from modern mammals, there's no elephants, no rhinos, no modern mammals. Including marsupials. There's no modern mammals, no modern species contemporary with dinosaurs at all. They are the creatures that, in fact, you would expect to find there. You find very primitive mammals and some very early sidelines. Yes, there are loads and loads of them.
So there are mammals. To clarify, you claimed that there were arm mammals, etc. Is it just to clarify the type of mammals that some of them found with dinosaurs?
Modern day mammals, modern day birds. If you want the details, it was in Creation magazine about 3 issues ago. I'm not sure if the embargo has elapsed, which would mean it would be on the website for free, but it's very close to it. And if there's enough interest, I can, when I go back to the office on Monday, I can fast track that onto the web for nothing. So you can see it for free. But I did show tonight coelacanths are still alive today, but absent from the top 65 million years, supposedly, of layers. So does that falsify evolution? No, they'll just say we haven't yet found the specimens that have been fossilised, undoubtedly, in the last 65 million years. So there's always a way out, you know. And I would say, man and coelacanths are alive at the same time. You don't find our fossils in the same strata. To which some might reply, well, of course not, because coelacanths live in the water and man lives on land. But whales and coelacanths live together and we don't find their fossils together. How you interpret the evidence will depend on the starting point. And I would say that there's good evidence that many of the dinosaurs lived semi-aquatic existences, and so some of the explanation for why they might be found without mammals present in many sites, including not all, is simply the order of burial. They were the next cab off the rank after the amphibians, as the floodwaters rose.
Yeah. So the claim now there is modern mammals with dinosaurs and so on. That's very important to kind of.
News to me.
Yeah, well, it would be because.
What are modern mammals?
I don't want to say the wrong information, but the article was published 3 issues ago in Creation magazine. It might well already be on our website, and it involved creationist going to multiple museums and speaking with the curators, and the curators let slip that they had drawers of mammalian fossils and avian fossils contemporaneous
of modern mammals and modern birds.
Well, that's that. Could I encourage you, please, and everybody here, investigate for yourselves. And if that means you too have to go out to those museums and talk with the curators and go and look at the specimens for yourself, please do so.
It's absolutely no secret that there are loads and loads of mammals contemporary with dinosaurs, but they are not modern mammals. They are, in fact, what we would identify as primitive mammals.
But birds?
Similarly, birds, yes, there are birds, for a long while the famous Archaeopteryx was the only one that could be identified. Then plenty more have been discovered since then, including creatures intermediate between birds and theropod dinosaurs, which were their ancestors.
From my memory of this article, it was at least one example of a clearly modern bird.
We look forward to that article with great interest. I'm sure that Professor Graves will be very interested to comment on that at the future time as well. But now, there are other questions. Another issue which has dominated. Also, there's some questions about that in the text messages, and also both speakers talked about it, was the nature of dating. And so there's a question has come in, how do you explain carbon isotope testing of the age of fossils and so on. Now, you've suggested, David, that there's some tensions with the nature of dating, particularly where we can be clear of the age of rocks and so on. Now, Professor Graves, you outlined a number of different dating techniques and so on. Like, what's your reaction to the claims that some Mount St. Helens, for example, that the rocks there are?
I know the claims, and that's why I took care to point out in my slide that a lot has been learned. There's been a lot of advances in understanding of potassium argon dating over the past 20 to 30 years. And I know that what was taken from Mount St. Helens for bulk samples, as far as I know, step heating was not used, and under those circumstances, you're going, of course, to get contamination in the samples. You can't avoid it. That's what happened in the early cubifora dating. And the cubifora dating sequence now is extremely well established, and it agrees with dating in another nearby site, Shungura Formation in the Omo, and similarly with sites west of Lake Turkana. And the series of dates go between, 4 million and about 1.2 million. Maybe it was a bit later than that, and they're in white order. You can detect changes in fast evolving species along that period, such as three different lineages of big like creatures in fossil elephants, some lineages of fossil antelopes, and so on. They change over this period, so that you get those which are more like the modern African elephant, modern bush pig, warthog, giant forest hog, and so on, at 1.2 million than you do in those 2 million in zone.
Any comments at all, David, or should we move on to the next? Maybe I'll make life difficult for Lewis. Lewis Jones has joined us here. He's going to be actually presenting tomorrow. But now, David's made a number of...
I thought I was here just to keep these two apart, actually.
No, that's okay. We're going to add you to the discussion. I think there were some questions that came out of lunchtime that we didn't really get a chance to address, which were more appropriate to address now, because Lewis is going to be presenting tomorrow. He's going to be presenting from an old Earth creation perspective. I suppose this is one of the dynamics that we're looking to see the interplay tonight. Now, Lewis, David made a number of claims, particularly in his presentation, that he can't accept the millions of years paradigm and so on, built on death, etc., as a Christian, and that's part of his Christian faith and so on. Now, you do apparently accept large scale time frames and so on. How do you explain that, or how do you reconcile that?
Sure. I mentioned at lunchtime today, but the issue really is, in a sense, the difference between us is a difference in methodology of biblical interpretation. That is, I was thrilled to hear him talking about Jesus in the middle of a presentation on bones. I mean, I'm a Christian, like, we're both Christians and both think Jesus is the most important thing that we want to get across to people. And so the difference between us is this methodology of interpretation in the scriptures. Perhaps the simplest thing to say, but I can point to come back tomorrow. I'm going to give a long presentation on how this all how this all works. But in terms of methodology, I would say that what I want to put at the center is the events surrounding the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, so that it seems that the Bible points forward to that. So the Old Testament points us forward to that event, those events, of that person who's coming. And then the rest of the New Testament, in a sense, is an explanation of who Jesus is and why he came and so on. What the Bible is all about is more about. Sometimes we talk about the Bible being about why things happen, sort of purpose behind the world. I want to notch that up and say it's actually about who. That is, it's about who is behind it all, and who's the most important, the central character in our history. And so in human history, that's Jesus. And who's it about? Who's behind it all? Well, it's God, and that's what the Bible is telling us. As it points us forward to these key events, the solution to sin and death, as David was explaining to us. I mean, the one and only possible solution to sin and death, Jesus Christ. And so, but it's the pointing forward. The Bible is shaped by a pointing forward to Jesus from the past. And a looking back or explanation of Jesus kind of in the present, as it were, the present of the New Testament. That's not an argument for why I can accept old ages. I really think it's going to take a lot more explaining. But suffice it to say, I'll give you one little hint. That is that when I look at the whole Bible together and look at all the different ways in which the Bible after Genesis looks at Genesis and understands Genesis, and particularly the opening chapters, but you could point to any a chunk of the opening chapters of Genesis. When I look at how the Bible looks back to those chapters, what I see is that the story that ends in Revelation 22, which is the last chapter of the Bible, the story that ends there in heaven with creation at rest and it's all good, the story that ends there starts in Genesis 2 verse 4. That is, the New Testament is particularly interested in these opening chapters of the Bible, and it seems fairly straightforward to me that when we're talking about history, this story of salvation, as Christians would call it, the story of God's interaction with his creation and his people, the story that ends in Revelation starts actually in Genesis 2 verse 4, not in Genesis 1 verse 1. And so the question then comes in my mind, what is that opening bit right there? What is that initial opening bit? And it seems to me that, again, from what I take from the evidence of the rest of the Bible and applying it to that bit of the Bible, it seems to me that that is something like an introduction, a prologue, an overture that is about who God is in relation to his creation, in relation to his people. It's not a how. It's, in fact, very definitely a who. Who is this all about? Who do Israel, the nation of Israel, need to reckon with as they think about their lives under God and the future of their nation? So it seems to me that's it.
Well, I'll just say thanks for the looking forward to your presentation tomorrow. Maybe I'll ask another question and then maybe I'll save it for a comment or so as well. So can a Christian believe in evolution?
Probably more brief this time.
Yes, well, please, yeah.
There are Christians who believe in evolution. There are people who believe that Jesus is the only solution to sin and death. I call those Christians who believe that evolution happened in some form or not. So there are Christians who believe in evolution. I love this kind of thing tonight because I'm quite happy to hear people attacking evolution, right? I don't mind that. I don't love evolution or something. I'm not as enthusiastic as these other guys about it. Can a Christian believe in evolution? Well, yes, I think they can. I mean, there are lots of them who do. I think one of the key issues then is sin and death. And in fact, exactly as David presented tonight, the key issue is sin and death. There are other more marginal issues, but I think the key issue is sin and death, which comes from Romans 5. If you're kind of looking, if you want to note that down, that's a place where you want to look to kind of think about that question. The New Testament, in the New Testament.
So David, do you have a comment there?
Well,
we've got another half an hour or so before we all have to be out, so less than that would be nice.
I'll try another 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Yes, Christians can believe evolution. I'd have to say that, otherwise I'd be a first-class hypocrite, because for my first 12 years as a Christian, I believed evolution and the whole millions of years. The question is, why have I changed? And I presented a little snippet of that tonight with the Eden on Bones diagram. By the way, if you're looking for a free little leaflet on that, we freshly printed out. It's called the Eden on Bones Heresy, and it's a little A5 size leaflet for free out on tables. And I think they might have even pinned up the big poster on it. But there's lots of other scriptures too that point to the fact that the New Testament writers and Jesus himself clearly accepted the timeline of the Bible. For example, when Jesus was asked about the laws concerning divorce and marriage, he said, "Have you not read that at the beginning God made them male and female?" It makes no sense to say, well, that's just the beginning of humanity, because, you know, the beginning of humanity, God made humanity. Where's the logic in that? But also the parallel passage in another gospel says, at the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. And so straightforward reading of scripture puts that 4,000 years or so before Jesus was speaking right there at the beginning of creation. There's no room for millions of years, and there's no need to accept them. I've shown tonight that the evidence actually fits far better with the biblical account of history than with trying to accommodate it to fit secular science. So I would say if Dr. Jones and others are trying to fit in the millions of years, it's got nothing to do with what's written in the Bible. It's all to do with outside influences.
Okay, well, let's move it back to some of the number of questions we've got here, which we'll touch on. And there's a number we've come towards you, Professor Graves. And one of them concerns the nature of... it's a long question, but I think the gist of it is essentially is of adding information to the human genome. So... the DNA contains a massive amount of information, even for the simplest bacteria, yet there's no proof of adding information to be added by chance and natural selection. Are you able to comment or reflect on? So I think it's basically suggesting that you can't add information to the human genome through evolution by natural selection.
I don't quite see what the question is getting at. The amount of DNA in the human genome is... slightly less, in fact, as we now know, than that in the chimpanzee genome, about a quarter of that in the genome of a particular species of salamander. The amount of DNA in our genomes is not predictable from taxonomic arrangements. So I don't quite see the force of that. I mean, we've got loads, any animal has loads more DNA in their genome than any bacterium. Yes, it's true. But among the animals, you know, you can't say there's so much that there really is junk, despite the fact that some people have disputed it recently. And there's loads of
DNA that we just don't know what it might be from.
Okay, do you have any comments on DNA at all, David? Or should we move on to a question for you? There's another question for you. Yeah, okay. Well, it says.
Can I reply to that? I asked a question.
Yeah?
The more and more they're looking at the DNA molecule, there is a massive amount of information on this molecule which they don't understand what it is coded for.
Yeah, that's right.
But to turn around and say junk is making an assumption that it's not valid.
Yeah, it's
because the information you're finding now is in actual fact they're coding for different purposes other than making proteins.
Yeah.
So the question is about the nature of the gene.
Oh, I see, yes. Okay, yes, there is a lively controversy at the moment going on about this, and I'm persuaded by the argument that, in fact, a lot of it is junk.
I suspect that could be a view that dies out with Professor Groves if they can be so blunt, because younger scientists at the cutting edge of the field are finding that indeed there's there's a whole lot more complexity of DNA than was imagined.
Yeah. A lot that was considered junk is now known to have a function, but not protein coding. That's all.
The sheer amount of information in the DNA that occupies more than your British Cyclopaedia Britannica. And they only know something like about 10% of what the information is.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to be discovered. To turn around and say junk before you found it is the wrong thing to do.
Thank you for that comment about the DNA and so on. We'll move on to another question for you, David. He said, if the Grand Canyon is the result of a sudden erosion from a global flood, why doesn't the whole Earth look like the Grand Canyon?
There are places in the Earth that do have very large canyons, not as large as the Grand Canyon. Though undersea canyons are larger, not that I've visited them, but imagery shows this. In fact, off Perth, there's a massive canyon, and it fits with vast quantities of water flowing off this continent from the other side of the Great Dividing Range to the west. And when you see the patterns of geological features, it really does fit with a global flood. If you put a bore down 3,000 kilometres from the Grand Canyon, you'll strike the same layer. There's a very famous layer called the Coconino Sandstone, and that can be found 3,000 kilometres away. So that was a very large sheet of water. And so you've got these evidences of large quantities of water flowing off the continents. And during the initial phase, as the continents were uplifted towards the end of the flood, then there would have been vast sheets of water flowing off the continents. And that accounts for why you find a lot of features with very flat tops and so on. You also find one of our scientists called Noah's Little Travellers, boulders, just that bear no relationship to the surrounding rock, sort of dumped on these vast plains, carried by what? Rushing water.
So how do you determine this carry travel?
Well, how did the boulders get there? Now, the secular scientists have to invoke another explanation, whereas we would say the simpler one, surely Ockham's razor should have won, especially if you start with the advantage of knowing what really happened in the past. And we've got the account in the Bible of the global flood, the evidence fits with it. So you find that the steep-sided gorges narrowing towards the base as the waters narrow. You also find things like water gaps. So in other words, you've got these mountain ranges. Australia's got plenty of them, where for no apparent modern reason, there's suddenly a gap in a mountain. Now, how did that get there? And it fits with the scenario of vast amounts of water, more vast than we can imagine. And in fact, the young generation of geologists, most of whom have not been raised in the church and don't know what it is that the older ones are fighting against, will ask the question, hey, you guys, here we've got, say, polystrate fossils, right? Why won't you invoke, a local catastrophe? And increasingly, they're swinging away from geology, swinging away from uniformitarianism, and starting to invoke a series of catastrophes. They don't dare invoke the one that's in the Bible. That's a bit too close to the bone. Water gaps, plains, large boulders that bear no relationship to the surrounding terrain. short bits of global flake and, you know, the various stages of it.
Yeah, we haven't got any professional geologists or anything on here, so it's difficult to have any kind of comment or reaction to that, but no.
Well, I'm an earth scientist. The biggest canyon in the solar system is in Mars, called Valles Marineris. It's even much bigger than the Grand Canyon, but there's no stream at the bottom of it because all the water is gone from Mars.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Our resident geologist, Taz Walker, is looking with interest at that story and how it's unfolding. And, you know, so he's watching. Was it water? Was it some other fluid? Fascinating stuff. But here on Earth, the evidence is very consistent with water. By the way, if anyone's interested, Taz Walker got his PhD in mechanical engineering, worked in the power industry, but then went back as a mature age student to University of Queensland to do, firstly, a bachelor's degree in geology, because rocks were his first love, and his dad had pushed him into engineering. As a young earth creationist, to do geology, and all the lecturers knew he was a young earth creationist, and he would often ask very challenging questions of the professors. They knew where he was from, they knew what he was about, they couldn't help but give him high distinctions all the way through, and when he did his honours degree on radiometric dating, he got first class honours. And so there are several articles on their website designed to help Christians who are students at university in the thick of the whole evolutionary paradigm, how you can excel, even though they might know you're a young earth creationist Christian, how you can excel, and they can't help but give you top marks. It requires much more work, but anyway, well worth reading.
Okay, well, we've got another question for you now, Professor Graves. It's about macroevolution. I think one of the challenge about providing examples of evolutionary change from one kind of completely different species to another kind, the suggestion that variation within a species is not evolution. You would make a comment on the what is commonly known as macroevolution, the transition from species to species kind to species kind.
Yeah, it's macroevolution is just evolution writ large, like say the transition from theropod dinosaurs to birds, or at least some theropod dinosaurs to birds. The transition from so-called mammal-like reptiles to mammals. That's meant by macroevolution, and it's the same process as small-scale evolution within a species, evolution between species. It's just that the fossil record is richer of examples of evolution of one species from another, simply because they occur in more recent rocks. So, you can look at them in more fine-grained detail. It's the same process.
Right, okay. Another question here is about if human evolution was divergent, that is, that there are many side species, what happened to these side species?
They died out. And by the way, this is what Bernard Wood was getting at in the slides you showed. So it's what I've seen lots of times before. The creationists are liable to just take phrases out of context and give them a different meaning. What Bernard Wood was talking about was the side branches, which I illustrated on the slides. And they died out, and we don't know, but we assume that some of them were simply out-competed by those that survived.
Could I encourage people... you can find Bernard Wood's articles and check those quotes in context and see that I have not misrepresented him. If you want a simple way to do it, just go to creation.com and type in Bernard Wood. That will take you to my article where in the references I cite the exact secular papers that I got the quotes from. So please do that. By all means, check. We're not frightened of people checking what we say.
Mm-hmm. There's also another one, I suppose it's similar related to that again, Professor Graves. If there are many side branches in intermediary fossils, why do we only have one type of human today?
Because we developed, as we gradually developed a wider and wider range of ecological tolerances, pushing other species out, just as unfortunately we're doing so today. You know, we're spreading our numbers and altering habitats and so on, causing widespread extinctions. So, it started way, way back.
Right, okay. Another question for you, David, has come through is, if dinosaurs were created 2,000 years ago, did Dino get into Noah's Ark? The size of it in scripture is not big enough to accommodate them. And why are they not here in today's time? Was Ice Age here in the last 6,000 years? So basically, there's a couple of questions there about the dinosaurs and the Noah's Ark and the Ice Age and so on. How can that possibly work?
When it comes to the Ice Age, the biblical creationist win hands down, because we've got a great mechanism to explain. You need lots of evaporation with the moisture falling onto the cold land masses. And so to get lots of evaporation, you need a warm ocean. Having lived in North Queensland every year, when the sea surface temperature gets above 27 degrees, we knew it was a cyclone season, on for young and old. Vast amounts of water evaporated from the oceans. So fountains of the Great Deep breaking open implies warm oceans, lots of evaporation, lots of clouds shading the land, therefore on the high altitude parts of the world, lots of snow falling, precipitation of snow, and then compacting as ice, forming the glaciers, which it seems from scratch marks and so on, covered vast areas of particularly the northern hemisphere. And there's a reference in Job which refers to ice being around. And so it doesn't mean it was cold. I mean, I can visit the glaciers in New Zealand at sea level in my shirt sleeves in summer, and there's vast things of ice. So one of our number who's a retired meteorologist has put the post-flood ice age at about 500 years, which came to a sudden end, a rapid feedback mechanism. You get the ice melting in increasing amounts, cooling the oceans, less evaporation, less cloud in the sky, and the sun begins also to melt the snow and ice. You get even more cold water flowing to the seas, and check out our site where it says about the mammoths, and you've got a tie-in with the end of the Ice Age, the preservation of these mammoths across Siberia and so on in the ice, and then the climate really changed, because without those warm ocean currents anymore, Siberia suddenly becomes a much less pleasant place to live. Dinosaurs on the Ark, yes, that's what the Bible implies. Was there room for them on the Ark? It's been calculated that at the total number of different kinds of creatures Noah needed to take on the ark was about 8,000. So a species is not a kind, which we'll look at tomorrow. So it's about 8,000 kinds. Of the dinosaurs, might have been about 30 different kinds, maybe some more. It's interesting that the evolutionists themselves had whittled down the number of dinosaur species by about two-thirds, down to one-third of what it was 5 years ago, because you've got duplication, you've got juveniles having different morphology than adults, and so on. The large dinosaurs, yes, that's a problem, because the dimensions of the ark, the height of it was 17 metres, 23 metres wide, 140 metres long, three legs, whereas the largest dinosaurs, like brachiosaur type critters, I think from memory, 32 metres from tip of head to tip of tail. So how do you get them on board the ark? Well, as I put it to our Christian audiences, just imagine for a moment that God put you in charge of the Species Protection Flood Management Program, and it was up to you to decide which pair of each land animal and bird were brought to Noah to be taken on board the ark. You wouldn't bring grandma and grandpa brachiosaur. You'd take a couple of juveniles that were reaching maturity after 1 year aboard the ark. And that seems to have been what happened. Where are they today? Look, they seem to be extinct. But they're tantalising reports coming in from places like Congo and New Guinea of sightings of creatures that fit with scientists' reconstructions of certain dinosaurs from fossils. So it's possible that there's still some alive today. If one is found to the satisfaction of the evolutionary community, I don't doubt that they'll just do with it what they've done with the coelacanth and the swag and other living fossils.
So what would the community do, Colin, if you saw a live dinosaur today?
Well, first of all, the definition of dinosaurs, because of course birds are descended from theropod dinosaurs, so if you like, there are
whatever it is, 10,000 species of dinosaurs living. But I know what he means is giant dinosaurs. And if one turned up, you know, it would be the sensation of the millennium, but it wouldn't make any difference to biology. So I reckon that I know there are sorts of stories of dinosaurs in green hell and things like that, and where they have been investigated, they're found either to be fakes or to be based on something else. You know, cryptozoology is a subject where that means to search for unknown animals. It's a subject which unfortunately has also been subject to a lot of favouring, and I'm afraid some of the reports of very large reptiles are fakes, you know, deliberately overestimated anacondas and things like that.
We are just about out of time, I'm afraid, but I have one more final question. You did mention Job just before there, David. I was wondering, in Job 38, in the third creation account, it speaks of lions hunting their prey. Could this be saying that death could be a part of creation? Maybe you and maybe Lewis could have a comment about that.
By definition, it's referring to post-fall, vice-fall kind of, by definition. Whereas Genesis 1 makes it... Well, in fact, not just Genesis 1, but after the flood, God said to Noah, just as I gave you the green plants, now I give you everything. When you go back and look what Noah's, what God's referring to, two verses juxtaposed in Genesis chapter 1, where God says to man and to every beast of the earth, I give you the green plants of food. So originally, man and the animals were vegetarian. There was no carnivory prior to the fall. There was no death of animals prior to the fall, if you take scripture at a straightforward read. Can I just make one point? I should have done it in my talk. We don't use jack tracts for the reason that, you know, though his heart's in the right place, you've seen what Dr. Groves can do with creationists who misrepresent the situation. It's easy fodder. You know, we call it straw man. Whereas to do the same thing with material published on our website, where we have a multiplicity of scientists, there's wisdom and a multitude of counsellors, it's much harder for the skeptics to latch onto something and lambast it, as Dr. Rose did. So please, if you're a liner, team up with other people, because it's much better to be part of a group than on your own.
So, Lewis, do you want to make a comment?
Nope. I'll come back tomorrow.
Okay. We're just about out of time. We are going to be back here early tomorrow morning as well. Please put your hands together for our panelists.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.